Hey guys, welcome to episode 37 of Bedroom Beethoven's, the podcast where I sit down with music producers to explore music and culture, because music is more than emotion, entertainment, and art. Music is also an investment, hard work, and business. And being that link that propels these two dimensions of music, connecting its entire creative chain, well, Bedroom Beethoven's is that podcast which exists to keep music alive. And this week, you know, I always get nervous talking to cats from Brooklyn, New York, by way of Long Island, because I'm just this uncultured guy from Texas. And you know what I mean. There ain't any other place in the world that's like New York. And if you ain't from there, then there's something in the sauce that you just don't understand. So for this week, I wanted to take a deep dive into the culture, and J57 walks me through the concrete jungle through his internship at Fat Beats to being mentored by Primo and his thoughts on running a label, signing his friends, his idols, hell, even his rivals. And this all comes to a head as he prepares for a huge 2020. You might know him from Brown Bag All-Stars, you might know him from JMU Gang, or you might just know him because you have plain good taste in music. Either way, he's here. BedroomBeethovens.com is the website. Not too many podcasts have them, so check it out. It's dope. I built it. It's got all the info on there, YouTube, Instagram, and you can follow the Twitter at BedroomBeatPod. That's Bedroom BeetPod. Visit the website, shoot me an email, do whatever you want, man. It's all there for you. Leave a review of the podcast on Apple Podcasts, rate me 5 stars, subscribe to the YouTube, and that would help me out immensely. And if you enjoy what I do, visit the patreon.com/bedroombeethovens and you can support the show for as little as $2. I keep the show ad-free, and the tiers are really interesting. I added a tier on there where if you're an up-and-coming producer, I'll play your track at the end of the episode. For other people to check out. You know, it's exposure. Other stuff is little stickers and merch and access to early episodes. One man show. It's just me. Help out your boy. I'm like an inch from groveling here. I'm your host, Cello, and you're now tuned in to
It's the Bedroom Beethoven Podcast.
How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. My dad had a saying growing up that how a person does one thing is how they do everything. So I appreciate the prep you did to be here. And I'm going to assume that level of preparation and excitement spiderwebs into other facets of your life.
It is true. And that saying is great. I am going to use that and I will cite in reference that it's your dad. So I appreciate that. Thanks for the line. You
know? Oh, man, the thanks is all on the side of the table. The motivation for this podcast is like, I respect the culture, but I would like to know more about the history. And I'm not talking about like the Big L Jay-Z days or the golden age of hip hop or the impact that Grandmaster Flash had. I want to know like the little stuff that contributes to the big stuff.
Yeah, I got you. That's cool.
Have you seen your Wikipedia page?
Oh, yes, I absolutely have.
How accurate is that?
Oh, it's like almost completely accurate.
Okay, it's a cardinal sin for me to use that as a reference when I look up my guests, so I haven't, but I know there's a lot of history there as someone who's put in their 10,000 hours.
I mean, the stuff that's not accurate is like really minor, and...
Well, New York's a rough place. What did James have to overcome in order to become J57?
Yeah, oh my God, that's a really good question. You know, I mean, it's a tough one because... Like, I'm a nice dude, so, you know, growing up in New York and in like, the real New York, not today's New York, you know what I mean? And with the culture and hip-hop being, like, the old-style New York, it was just, like, just don't get got was pretty much the theme when I was younger and stuff like that. And, like, try to, like, soak up a lot of knowledge, like, be a sponge and understand what's going on from street smarts to book smarts to hip-hop to... production to emceeing and the industry and all that. So like I had a lot to learn and I used to keep my mouth shut as much as possible, which was tough because I had, you know, at the time I had like, I wouldn't say I was unfiltered, but I was not, I wasn't fake, and who I am and who I was, especially at the time, was, you know, not hyper, but I was definitely a excited younger kid. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what it was like. It was like harnessing that without, so I wasn't annoying or anything like that. You know what I mean? And kind of just trying to learn about the world. Really, that's what it was. And now I'm a lot older, and I know how. There's almost nothing in the music industry that will shock me at this point. Almost nothing.
Well, your affiliation with Fat Beats, I mean, talk about having a crystal ball. I mean, you had DJ Jab, who slapped together this venue to sell records. And even today, I mean, having a retail store and a record label and being a distributor, it's hard enough to do even one of those things. But at the time, you had, you know, Gangstar and Jay-Z and M. They just swung by the store. And I mean, if we're talking about networking, I mean, if we're talking like, that's like saying, like, I want to play for the Yankees and I get a job as a bat boy for Derek Jeter. You know,
that's a really, really good analogy. And you know what, man? I always like to say that Fat Beats was like a focus group for me. That's pretty much what I used it as. The people that would come in, all different walks of life, really, from around the world. You know, all different ages, races, everything. You know, from different countries, everything. You just can't get that anymore. You know, like, you know, in real life, you could only get internet stats and whatever. And, you know, people fake a lot of stuff, and people do this and say one thing and say the other and do the other. And some people. Most people are hype beasts. They're into whatever is there's hype, and that's going on right now in indie hip hop very heavily. Not even just indie hip hop on a trap level, but I'm talking about even in like our boom bap traditional hip hop world. That's actually extremely prevalent right now, which is really funny. And you know what I'm talking about, and everybody listening does too. You know, the reason I'm still relevant in my own little world, because I haven't gotten to the level yet where I'm in the game completely yet. You know what I mean? I'm about to be. Next year is definitely the year. There's a big release that's coming out in the top of the year. I cannot talk about it on air, but off air I will happily tell you. But there's something that's big that's happening in Q1, and it's going to change my life.
Well, let's talk about that. You had a PhD in rap economics after being at Fat Beats for 5+ years, and then you also went to college for marketing. So you saw the days of the $50,000 Busta Rhyme videos to iPods to now you have purple splatter glitter vinyl. How do you keep up with the consumer interest? Because how do you know what you're doing over at 5-7 Collective is not only fulfilling your destiny as a CEO, but you're also giving the people what they want?
Great questions, man. You really are dope at what you do.
I appreciate that, man.
Because everything you said is all real. And, you know, if you're not my age or older, you wouldn't understand what you just said completely. I think if you're a little bit younger, you would, for sure. But, like, somebody who's mad young, they wouldn't understand all that. And I think I just want to salute you on that first.
I'm 34. I don't know if that's old in hip hop terms, but
I feel like it is. I'm 36. Yeah. I'm 36 years old, and I'm damn proud of it. You know what I mean? I'm damn proud that I'm 36. Like, if you go on my Facebook, which, like, I have like a lot of friends on there and whatever, like, I don't hide my age. A lot of people are scared and they hide their age. I've never hidden my age. And it's on my Wikipedia because somebody saw it off my Facebook. The one, right. You know, one of the people who contributed to that saw that and put it there. And I'm not hiding that. I'm not dodging that. I never have, never will. There are guys exactly your age that I know that are rappers who are trying to make music like they're 19 and dress like they're 19 and act like they're 19. And that's a whole different.
Don't get me started, man.
But to get into what you're saying, it actually kind of piggybacks on what you were just saying, though, what I was getting into. You know, I didn't change up. I'm not going to adapt in that capacity. I know what's popping. I'm in Atlanta all the time. I know exactly what's going down in Atlanta. You know what I mean? I'm working personally with some of the biggest trap producers in person, in actual person, like with samples that I've created or co-productions or whatever. I'm actually in person with them, and they're like 19 years old, now like 20, turning 21, and I'm like picking their brain. And these are the first sessions where J Dilla and Premier and Pete Rock's names are not brought up because they don't understand that life. They're young kids from Atlanta and whatever else. So it's like I'm not adapting in the sense where I'm disowning my world, you know what I mean? I'm not disowning it, but when I step into those sessions, I'm bringing them up and I'm trying to school them about those guys. You know what I mean? For sure. You know, kind of putting like, whatever, like putting, you know, the medicine in the candy kind of thing, because they don't want to hear about that. They're literally, because they're so young, their goats are Drake and Lil Wayne. And I'm not kidding. These are real conversations with some of the biggest hit-making trap producers in the world right now. These are real conversations. So this is where the mentality is. You know what I mean? So I just say all that to say, I'm not going to change up. I'm not even going to adapt in a sneaky, I want to be relevant way. I'm just going to keep doing me. And if I'm into it, I'm into it. Like when I work with those kids, for example, I'm into it. I want to do it because I'm doing it more from a sample perspective. I love making those samples. I love that some of the trap beats, you know what I mean? I love some of that stuff a lot, production wise and whatever else. So it's like, I'm into it, but I'm not, but you know, if you listen to a J57 record, you're not going to hear a trap beat. I mean, I don't want to rap on that. Nobody on the planet wants to hear me rap on that. And it's funny because there's a lot of rappers I've worked with and MCs I've worked with who actually are starting to do that. And I'm like, dude, not the move. It's not for them. You know what I mean? So I know it's for me. I know what works for me. And I don't make music, any type of music, unless it kind of, you know, speaks to me and makes me want to create. So I think that's what it is. I think that's why I could go from having, you know, commuting in 2005 from Long Island to New York City, you know, a few times a week while still going to college on Long Island and living at home before I moved, you know what I mean? With a book bag, and my book bag only had cases of CDs and my CD player. And that's how I would listen to music on my 1.5 hour commute every single day, each way.
Doing what you want to do a year and some change later, is it easier or harder than you thought? Because you're dropping 80 releases for over 30 artists. You're so busy, I'm surprised you even had time for me today.
Dude, I appreciate all the knowledge on that. Because I don't think anybody realizes there are over 30 artists on the roster. And like, when I say that number to people, it blows their minds. I mean, yo, with me, I'm able to do this because I have a team. Period. I have a team. I have Rick Chavez, Von Eisen, Mark Ski. You know, my girl Erica, she helps too. Like, we're a team. My manager Justin, you know, my business partners, like everyone's hands are on deck and everybody's involved in some capacity that, you know, on the business end, we're doing stuff. Even my own dad helps with business, like business management. It's the only way I could do it. I would not be able to do it otherwise. Actually, I wouldn't be interested in doing it otherwise. That's why I never did, because, you know, I just didn't, like you said, I didn't have the time. So I just really want to put, you know, salute everybody real quick by saying
all that. Yeah, I didn't know you had a Verizon network behind you, because I was like, man, this dude. Busy as hell. And you know what? Homeboy Sandman just signed the Mellow Music Group, and I would have loved if he joined you. But that's just a personal note.
That was a conversation. That was a little bit of a conversation. I mean, no, I don't mean like a conversation like where he's like, Jay, I want to come sign with you. It wasn't that. It was definitely like, I knew a year before that he was not, you know, that he was going to be a free agent. And we sat down and we were having lunch. And this was weeks before my label started, before we launched. And I said, he was telling me that, you know, because we're brothers, man. We go back a long time. So I could know that ahead of time. And obviously it's public knowledge if I'm able to say it on a radio show, you know, on a podcast. I mean, and you know what? He was saying that he's going to be a free agent. And I was like, dude, I wish I could afford you. I don't think I can. You know what I mean? Like, I'm new in this world. And also, more importantly, even if I was able to scrounge up the money and all that, because I know it wouldn't be cheap, but even if I was able to do it, I still want to make sure I do it right because I didn't start the label yet. So I want to make sure I've already been there, done that. And I know in the future I will sign him. I know I will. That's family to me. And when the bag is right and when I've already been there, done that for so long, yeah, that's when it's time for me to reach out to my brother and be like, yo, I got this. You know, can we talk about this? Can we talk about that? What are you trying to do? I'll be reaching out to him for sure and a couple other guys of his caliber. You know what I mean?
I'm so glad to hear that.
Thank you, man. We're doing it big. Like I've said in recent interviews and whatever else, like, you know, shouts to Stone's Throw and Rhymesayers. I'm grateful to have worked with people on both labels and have, you know, whatever, like a rapport with them and stuff. And those are, and Def Jux too, man. Like, these are idols of mine. You know what I mean? Like Uncle Howie Records as well. These are idols of mine. Like, I, you know, for my age and whatever else, like, especially coming from New York, like all these guys that I'm talking about, all these dudes that own these labels and stuff, like, these are idols of mine. I was a young kid being like, one day I want to be like LP and Slug and, you know, Peanut Butter Wolf and, you know, all these dudes that own labels, you know, that was kind of, that are artists, you know, like that was a dream of mine. And that's going to happen. I don't know how soon, but I'm not going to give up till it happens. And we both know I'm sitting here right now talking to you because I'm the guy that just never gave up and I'm never going to.
I'm a firm believer in manifestation, so let's put that shit out in the universe.
Oh, dude, me too. I've been putting that out in the universe and coming back. And I'm going to be one of those guys. And people will quote this from this podcast for sure.
Hell yeah, man. On my last episode, I had a producer who worked at XM, and he interviewed Guru, and I wanted to get your opinion on something. Because at the time, Guru wasn't down with Primo, and he wanted to work with Solar to do the Jazzmatazz records and all that. But I think the safe explanation is to say people, they get older, and the way you think changes. But 20 years later, people still recognize how good Primo is. What were your thoughts on that whole situation? Because Primo still hasn't talked to Solar since like 2004, and now we're getting new Gangstar. If Guru was alive today, would he even want this to happen?
I mean, I met Guru and Solar. I met Guru once in 2004. He came into Fat Beats. I was interning. The very end of 2004 when I started interning, he came in. That dude was super fucking cool, man.
A limo. That what you're doing is that yeah, check that out. If I rhyme this, you will find this situation shall advance. You could take a glance or dance. Elevated lyrics to arouse a crowd. Now tell me who's the man to show you how.
Super cool. Like, big smile. I was shook. It was like, he might have been the second, like, person of note that I met at Fat Beats while I was new. The first one was Ali Shaheed Muhammad, who came in and did it in-store my first day interning. And it was like a surprise in-store, so it was like a smaller turnout because it wasn't like – it was like a last-minute kind of thing. And then when people heard about it, and because the internet wasn't the internet in 2004 like that, with social media and stuff, when the word finally got out, the place got packed, don't get me wrong. But I got to pick, you know, Ali Shaheed Muhammad's brain for like 20 minutes, which was amazing. And then like weeks later, Guru came in, and that was amazing. He was the coolest dude. And then 2 years later, Solar and Guru came in, and I just can't forget how mad Solar made me as a person.
And basically what we do is press up instrumental tracks to everything we do, because when rap started with what they did was, which was so ingenious, was to create a whole form of urban style music from just two turntables and two records and a microphone.
Where I had to go in the back room and call Audible Doctor, and I was like, that dude is a jerk off. That dude is a complete jerk off. I'm like, he's like bitching me out because he wants to get his record in the store, and I don't even handle that. You do, like don't even hit him back, bro. That guy's an asshole. And then you fast forward all these years and you find out that's what he is, you know, to the point where I could actually speak on that publicly. Dude's a complete jerk off. And I don't have any knowledge on that I could speak on publicly about, you know, Guru and Premier. I do know for a fact, I mean, this is public knowledge you could hear anywhere, that they, you know, they absolutely patch things up. It sounds to me like Premier's doing the move, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's what if I was him, like, this is a beautiful thing.
DJ Premier was kind of this mentor that helped your mentality. And with all things in life, at least 50% of everything is mental. Yeah. So I wanted to know what you meant by this. Was it just overcoming roadblocks, or he just opened you up to different ways to do things?
I mean, first of all, I've been a diehard. See, I'm 36. So for 20 years, he's been my idol. And I've only been friends with him for like 7 years. So think about that. I mean, being in the studio with him, I mean, I guess 8 years now we've been friends. So like being in the studio with him since like April 2011 was the first time I went in there, and it was me, him, and Mac Miller. Funny story. I just got to see the dude's work ethic in person. So yeah, mental is definitely half of it. You're absolutely right. Like, I spend a lot of my morning and my day just making sure my mentality is on point. You know, after all these years of just letting it go astray, and my mental diet's a very important thing. I do not wake up and look at the news. I do not wake up and do anything negative. I don't check my friggin' email first thing in the morning. No, I'm creative. I need to be creative. I can't let that, you know, it get ruined. And you know what? I didn't learn those things from him, but I definitely watched work ethic-wise a lot of stuff that I implemented to my life. Like, I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I left the studio at 9:30 in the morning with this dude, where he's like dropping me off at my little train stop over, you know, at the time I was taking like the F train or whatever. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go. All right, I'm going to drop you off the train, blah, blah, blah. And like, it's like 9:30 in the morning. You see like businessmen going to work, and he's leaving his job that he was in the studio from. Dude, I don't even know what time. He could have been there for a day or two. I don't know. Like, I got there at fucking 11 p.m. or 10 p.m. or something like that myself. He might have been there for hours and hours working, and that dude really puts in the work. Like, how are you in your early 50s and you're still out working, motherfuckers, dude? Like, he's out working people who are whatever age. Boom. 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 with unlimited energy inside them as a young kid who could go days without sleeping and being crazy and whatever. And this dude is doing that in his early 50s. Like, salute to him for real. And that's not me saying it because I'm friends with him. And I'm, you know, fortunate enough to even say that I'm friends with him, because that is like one of the greatest things in the world to me, of course, still to this day. But just being there and watching how he works and what he does and how calculated he is and how, like, he really gives a shit, man. He cares about music, you know? So I learned a lot from him.
Okay, so what I've learned so far is, like, that's probably why people respect Primo. I'm learning some things about Solar. The thing I like about you is you do whole projects with people, but it's not like early Little Brother where Ninth just gives you a catalog of beats, or early Cash Money Days where Manny Fresh gives you a batch. When you work, it's more than a rapper and a producer linking up for a real quick project. You know what? The same could be said for Gangstar. But the other side of the knife is that it can lead to friction. Maybe someone's trying to compromise or muscle their way in with the creative ideas, and then than what started as a lyricist beatmaker relationship. There's so much overlap now that the synergy's lost.
That's all right. You want me to speak on that? Like what I think about those kind of situations?
I want you to speak on it because you seem to have mastered it. The beauty of hip hop in general is there's always something that you don't know or someone else who knows more than you. And you should always be open to critique because it's about the craft and preserving the integrity, not your ego. And I think if I can offer you one compliment, it's that you adhere to that.
Thanks. Yeah, I really appreciate that because, you know, that's something I haven't really spoken about publicly. And I think about it all the time. And sometimes I want to write something for, you know, the internet, like on my socials about that. But then I also don't want to come off like a little pompous. So you're giving me the opportunity to finally talk about it.
There you go.
Thank you. Yeah, man. You know, I do my best work. All right. So I'm Jimmy. You know what I'm saying? That's me. I'm a human being. That's what my mom calls me. She calls me Jimmy. So I'm Jimmy, you know, but to be the best J57 I can be, if I'm doing an artist one-on-one production kind of record or even a group, whatever, if you let me be J57, I will give you the best product you can get. But if you want to have input on stuff, that's cool too. I don't love doing that. I've definitely done it a couple of times. It's never been like me fighting back. It's never been anything like that where like I'm scared to speak up or whatever. I've realized that there are artists out there who want to be involved in the track titles and the arrangement of songs, and they want to be involved in some of the song arrangements. You know what I mean? I'm not into the idea of doing a whole project with an artist where they're doing all of that. I'm just not into it. If it was somebody big, I would. If it was Jay-Z, I would. Give me, like, let's call it what it is. Like, don't call me out on the internet about it because it's the truth. You know what I mean? Like, if Jay-Z's people reached out, or how about this? When Jay-Z's people reach out and they have me do an album for him one day, because it will happen, like, if that's what he wants to do, and that probably is what he would do, I would be so into it and grateful, and that's fine. And I would go down history being like, that was fine with me. But if you're coming to me, like Shabam Sadiq, for example, I'm doing an album with one of my idols, Shabam Sadiq, who I've been a fan of since 1997. You know what I mean? And like now we happen to be friends and we happen to be making an incredible album. And not only is he letting me take the reins as far as creative control, he's letting me actually go to the length of creating a sound for the album, an actual sound. And I'm not talking about production wise. I'm talking about vocal sound design. So that's what it is. So in the end, I'm all about being in control for sure as a producer and having input from the artist. You know, that's what I'm into. But again, there are projects like J-Mo Gang, for example. Razkaz and Elgon are very good at arranging songs. They're both of them are equally very good at arranging songs. And they're really good at song titles. And they're really good at sending me verses with hooks already in there. And in like introspective sound bites and samples or whatever, like things that are already doctored up in there. Like Raz does that a lot. And that'll lead the way of the song. And then we kind of work around it. Like that's a different animal. You know what I mean? The J-Mo Gang thing is a different animal with that. It started out with me being the fully in control guy. It's not the Jay-Z thing where it's like they're in control and I'm not. It's not that. This one is actually a partnership. Like all three of us are equal in a lot of aspects. And no matter what, they're always like, Jay, but you're the producer. Do you like this idea? Because then it's a yes. So it's never like, here's what it is, Jay. They're like, yo, here's some ideas, Jay. What do you think? And I'm like, yo, I'm open to... My ego is outside of this room. It's over there. You know, everybody has one. We're born with one. I have one. I made sure I left it out. Then I locked this door. It's not in this room.
Oh, I love that, man. Yeah, I heard Fonte say the other week that before the Little Brother album came out, him and Big Pooh weren't even friends. They would just show up, record, leave, tour together, leave.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
I can't fathom that. They said this is the first time in their careers. Yeah, that they've actually went over to each other's house, barbecued, watched the game, laugh, and it's just and even the Roots. Questlove said he was on stage with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and before they played, the Red Hot Chili Peppers got into a huddle for like 3 minutes, and Quest was like, "Yo, what are they doing?" And a PA or something said like, "Oh, they do that before every show. They thank each other's talents. They tell each other how grateful they are for one another." And Questlove was like, "Damn, we don't even do that. And maybe that's why there's friction. Maybe we should start doing that."
That's a beautiful thing, man.
I guarantee you, if like Ghostface put his arm around Inspect the Deck or RZA put his arm around Capadonna from time to time and was like, hey, I appreciate you, maybe we'd be back to having classic Wu albums. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, you know what, man? I actually was backstage for the Dirty Science, you know, like, you know, Blue in Exile and Choosy and Joe Haas and, you know, all those homies, you know, they were all in town and I was backstage at their show and they did the huddle beforehand. And it was actually the first time I've ever seen that. And Exile led the huddle because, you know, he's their big homie. He led the huddle and he was just like on some thanking the universe and kind of God, but without being religious, like being like, thank you for the talents you gave us. You know, not to give away their stuff. It's not really giving it away. It's like a beautiful thing. It was a really dope moment to be to be around, and they asked me to come be in the huddle with them, even though I wasn't performing. I was just there with the homies. I've known them for a long time, and I've been a fan before all that too, funny enough. But I remember seeing and hearing that, and that was only a few months ago, and I've never actually seen that before. And it made me, I actually went and called a couple people that I do music with, and I said, I'm like, yo, we got to start doing that before. Like, that felt good, man. Like, thanking the universe for the talents that we were given. Like, we, nobody, you know what I'm saying? Like the greatest at whatever we do. Like, Mozart wasn't, he didn't create that. He was born with that. And that's truth, because he was a little kid doing stuff at a caliber men who could be in, like, in their 90s after working for, you know, 90 years at something and not be as good as he was at five. So that's universe given talent. Exile was speaking on some, like, thank you for the talent you gave us and letting us be the vessels to live out what you're giving us, so we can, you know, help people and, you know, with our music, which is a real, which is why I do music. That's, 'cause I understand that's what it is. You know what I mean? So I think that's really cool. And I think you're right. If a lot more people did it, yeah, maybe they'd stick together a little longer. I don't know. You know,
like, I'm a big firm believer in that. I mean, when people say like Jay Dilla is the best producer of all time, I'm not talking about what Rick Rubin or Questlove thinks. I'm looking at it from an average hip hop head perspective, and they're not heralding him because of his drums. I think what's going to set you apart from the next guy is your relationships with people and how you're able to connect with people and how your music is going to impact a generation, which is harder said than done. But I feel like it always goes back to the human element.
Yes. Well said. I think it does. You know, I mean, I like to say that I treat everybody fairly, and I just want the best music to come out as possible and us to get this win together. I mean, there's countless amount of human beings out there who have heard me say that phrase over the past few years. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, let's get this win. And I got to meet Jay Dilla's mom once at Fat Beats, and I met his brother. You know what I mean? Like, while he was doing songs, you know, when he put out the first Yancey Boys project and all that. Yeah, Ma Dukes is super nice. Like, I actually teared up meeting her. You know what I mean? I teared up a little something. It wasn't noticeable, but there was almost a thug tear there.
Thug tear.
I mean, you can't blame me, bro. It was a beautiful thing. And, like, I was just like, I thanked her for her son. I was like, thank you. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. Like, thank you. And she kind of teared up too. You know, and I'm sure she has that moment quite often. And that's a great thing. And I'm glad people are thanking her for her amazing contributions to the culture and everything else. Not to be cliche, but it's the truth. You know?
Yeah, no doubt. And so the culmination of everything we've learned, the motivation to start your label was based on you waiting around, not getting the deal you wanted or felt like you deserved. But what I like is you weren't jaded. You're independent, but you don't have a chip on your shoulder about major industries. And first off, that's healthy. But I was always wondering what would a deal look like that you would have took that would have made you join a label and become major?
Okay, so the first major deal that I was given was in 2011, or maybe it was either 11 or 12, and I can't remember. And it was for my group, Brown Bag All Stars. And the major will be not mentioned here. Don't even have a relationship with them anymore at this point, actually. They gave us a lot. They gave us a deal with a lot of money, but we couldn't. This is real shit. Like, we couldn't do anything solo wise. So it's like, I would have had a lot of money at a time where I was extremely broke and never even saw a big check before. And I still didn't for a bunch of years later, by the way, at least maybe five years later, I still didn't see my first like tremendous check and whatever else. And off of music. And I'll tell you right now, man, that was a little sad because we were like, we're about to do it. And we didn't, you know what I mean? But that was what it was. I learned, you know what I mean? I learned from that where I was like, my own pops looked at the contract and he called me like yelling, being like, this is the deal that you've been avoiding your whole career. Why would you do this just for all this money? Like, you won't be able to be J57. You'd have to be in Brown Bag. And if they shelve Brown Bag, well, then you can't even put out music and you'd have to get like a job and do what you got to do because like that would suck. And that was the only time my dad ever came close to saying get a real job. You know, that was him saying like, if you sign this deal, there's a chance you might have to do that because legally you wouldn't be able to be doing anything outside of that. So yeah, the contract would have to be a lot of money, a lot of, I own my own masters and I get to do whatever the hell I want to do, period. That would, and you know what, so far I haven't had that. And I've had two other majors give actual offers and that was the same thing. I still didn't get that. And then I realized over time, I'm like, I didn't have the leverage for that. That's all it was. That's why I keep getting the rapey kind of contracts. 'Cause it's like, I don't have the leverage to get that masterful, like what I want to own kind of thing, like where it's like, I'm just in charge. You know what I mean? So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do my own thing. And maybe I'm going to start listening to all these people who've been saying, I could see you being like a big label owner one day. And like Homeboy Sandman is quoted saying that to my man Element. Like I've said that recently in other interviews and stuff, but that's a fact. You know what I mean? Like people have said it to me over time. I always said I was not interested in doing that back. Like, I wanted to do it, but I wasn't interested in going for it because I didn't have the balls to do it. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't want anybody telling me what to do musically. I don't want them to tell me what to do with releases, and especially musically. I don't want anyone on this planet. I don't want them telling me. Because you know what? Even if they are a goat or whatever, and they, let's say a goat of some sort, you know, signs me and I look up to them, at the same time, if they're telling me, unless it's Rick friggin' Rubin, you know what I mean, or Quincy Jones, if they're telling me what to do musically, I'm not really listening because we're all different, man. Like, I'm into a lot of different music other people wouldn't be into, and I implement that in my music. You know what I mean? So the deal has to be, I get to do whatever I want creatively, and I have to come out. Like, the music has to come out. I can't be shelved. So I know that's a hard one. So majors are a tough move, you know, artist-wise for me. And I still am talking with them. I'm still taking those meetings. Even last month in September, like, I was in major offices talking with, you know, people about what I'm doing. That's still going down, you know, and I have great working relationships. Just sent a bunch of production to some of the biggest artists literally yesterday. You know what I mean? But I don't want to have that artist talk. You know what I mean? I'd rather do it from a production standpoint and then independently do my artist thing, because nobody could tell me anything of what I have to do.
You just name dropped Rick Rubin and taking like influence from other genres. What was so amazing about Rick Rubin and the work he did on Deloused in the Comatorium?
Did you know that's one of my favorite albums?
Bro, I know everything, man. Welcome to my show.
You nargling me right now? Whoa, you just blew my mind, because nobody talks about that shit.
You should have seen the curse it flew right by you. Paid you concrete, stained watch crutch and hobble suede. Auto de fe, a capillary hint of red. Only this man you pod, crescent in shape as...
All right. Man, you just blew my mind, because that's one of the greatest albums of all time, in my opinion. That might be the first album, modern album, that came out like in real time to me that blew my mind. That actually blew my mind, where I was like, whoa. You know what I mean? That might have been the first one. I want to say that was 2003, and I want to say it was 20. I just started making beats that year. And I want to say, and I was getting into song arrangement and whatever else, sort of. I wasn't as good as I am now, obviously, all these years later. But, like, that album blew my mind. And, I mean, look at the albums he's produced rock-wise. Like, System of a Down, for example. Like, the arrangements and the change-ups and all this stuff. Like, that shit was blowing my mind back then. And I was like, how do I make hip-hop music that has all these change-ups? This is what I was doing from day one of making beats in 2003. I mean, I have beats that are 5 to 7... no pun, minutes long. For real, I have them saved to this day. And where there's like mad change-ups. And also, keep this in mind, 2003 and 2004, that was a different time where like you could have a longer song and a longer beat and whatever. So that was a different thing. I was like, I want to do what they're doing, but in hip-hop, because nobody's ever done that. And then you fast forward to now, and I realized it's actually the opposite. Like, make shorter movements and have a lot of movements. That's my thing, for sure. But I mean, that's what I learned from the Rick Rubin thing. I thought it was really dope that how he... You know, he let System of a Down go and take other genre, like they're Armenian. So he let them, you know, as a producer, he let them have the key to the city and go like run free. You guys want to bring in the Armenian thing and do some weird sounding music that most Americans probably never heard before? Cool, do that. And then they did it and made a sound, and that's awesome. And then with Mars Volta, dude, I mean, I don't even know where to begin, because that album means so much to me. And they have multiple albums afterwards that are incredible as well. But like that one, yeah, Rick Rubin, like, I don't know, dude. It's just like everything about it. Just obviously the mixing and whatever is just incredible. But the arrangements just blew my mind. And I remember playing it at a young age for people that I'd be hanging out with and whatever else that maybe are hip hop heads to some degree, or maybe that are into more rock or whatever. And everyone across the board being blown away. And then when they really blew up, I mean, it didn't surprise me at all. Because I was like, these guys are freaking just... like Led Zeppelin meets, you know what I'm saying, whoever, you know what I mean? Like, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I'm just glad that you welcome stuff like that. I'm always amazed when I see like Pharrell doing beats for Britney Spears, or Primo doing stuff for Christina Aguilera. Yeah. Like, when you can produce across genres, I'm always a fan of that.
Oh, dude, yeah, like, oh, well, then you're going to be a longtime fan of me, because that's my long-term goal. It's like, I want to do beats on Post Malone's album. At the same time that I'm doing the most grimy sounding record with Shabam Sadiq. at the exact same time. Those records come out on the same day. I want them to. I want to be the first one to do that. Nobody's done that.
But it's advantageous for you if you're able to do that financially and everything. A lot of people stick to one lane because they can't go in the other lanes. They don't know how.
I know. And I think about that every day. I actually talk about it as much as I can, too, to remind myself that I'm fortunate / lucky. You know what I mean? That I'm able to do that. That I'm like, whatever I make today in the studio was because I felt it at the moment. Like last night, I was starting to listen to some glitchy kind of, you know, early 2000s Radiohead kind of music. It wasn't even Radiohead, and I love them. But I was listening to all the, and they were like, like this one female singer, I can't remember her name, but it was in Spanish and it sounded like straight up Radiohead music with a, you know, a female Spanish vocalist on top of it. And I was like, wow, I think tomorrow is going to be a glitchy kind of day where I'm bringing out the glitch drums again. I haven't done that in a couple of years. You know what I mean? But then all day yesterday I was working on stuff, editing Sky Zoo's stuff for his, that's my boy, like editing his stuff for his tour he's about to go on, just helping him out with that. So I'm like editing Pete Rock beats all day. So think about that. Think about the, whatever the word is, you know, like think about that dynamic. Like I'm working on Pete Rock stuff already, which is like obviously blowing my mind in general, just to be able to chop that up for my boy to go on tour and rap over this stuff. And then I'm listening to this Radiohead-esque sounding weird stuff. And I think that's going to probably infuse the, you know, the sound of today, you know, of what I'm doing today in the studio when we get off this.
That's dope, man. I the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was kind of a selfish question that I wanted to get answered. It was, you know, regarding Razzcast, The Soul on Ice 2, you probably knew about it before a lot of people did. Did you have any reservations? Because like Marshall Mathers LP2, Jealous One Still NV2, Only Built for Cuban Links Part 2, opinions are subjective, but I was talking to J-Zone in an earlier episode, and he says it's an L out the gate, because when you go back to build upon a 25-year-old album, people's memories and emotions are tied to the original, and you still can't compete with that. So how do you feel about album sequels or even your own personal thoughts on Razzcast kind of going back to the well?
You know, from an early stage of knowing him, I heard the records that he had, some of the records. I mean, I don't even know. I think maybe half of them didn't make the album by now, you know, fast forward a few years, but I heard them and I was like, oh wow, you actually did it. That's like and I didn't know him that well yet. And I actually said that to him. I was like, wow, you actually did it. Like, yeah, the sequels are not the move for sure. And I know that, but he actually did it. Like it's actually grown man rap. It's like, it's what he should be doing all these years later, sound wise. You know what I mean? And J-Zone has an incredible point. I actually thought about that yesterday. Again, it just popped in my head because a lot of random stuff pops in my head, which is why I meditate so often, because I have to stop with the randomness. But that's also why I could write really well. I can easily do it like I used to. But I was thinking about that yesterday when I was like, damn, this could have gone really left for Raz. Like this could have been, but he's a great artist and he's a great writer. And he's a great song arranger and creator, and he's really good at picking production. So I think it kind of goes back to that, where it's a rare thing. You can't really call it. There's not too many, and I'm not being biased. I'm not being biased because I'm on the record. Like, I'm really not. I'm only on the record at doing ad-libs. It's not like I'm featured rapping or I did a beat. Like C1 did that beat. Shouts to him. Yeah, like if I felt like J-Zone was right in this instance, you know, I would have kept my mouth shut. I wouldn't be rambling like this about it, to be honest with you. If I thought it was right, I wouldn't publicly say it about Raz. You know what I mean? I wouldn't do that. So the fact that I'm just going off right now about it means I really do believe he did it. Like the Justice League production, everybody's production, incredible. Sounds great.
That's great, man. Yeah, that's a cosign. And J-Mo Gang, we'll probably see another record down the line.
You will see the debut album. And
oh, because it was an EP, right?
Yes. Well, it's, yeah. So, I mean, that is a record, though. So, like, the real album. And I'll tell you this, man, probably turning that in to Fat Beats today, tomorrow, or the next day. Waiting on the last mix.
Oh, man. I'm getting some exclusives here.
Getting the last mix and then getting it mastered by the homie Tenacity, which he's very certain he could do that relatively insanely quick.
But I want to give you the floor to talk about new stuff on the horizon. I know the label's pushing out music from Theory Has It, who's one of my all-time faves. So everything that's not your huge deal in Q1 2020 that you can talk about, you know, feel free to let the people know.
I mean, we have Crumb and Theory Has It's album coming out on October 22nd. That album is phenomenal. It's Crumb on the mic, Theory on the beats. And Theory's one of my favorites too. And like, I tell him all the time, like, yo, I used to bump your stuff in Fat Beats so hard. Like I used to play his records all the time. And I was a fan for so many years before being a collaborator. And then And then I A&R'd one of his albums on Soul Spasm, and now we're putting out one of his albums with Crumb on my label. Like, it's just super full circle, and that's coming out. We have D. Catalano, who's like a synth wave producer, really dope. His music sounds kind of like if John Carpenter released an album right now and was super influenced by different genres that came out since he's put out music. Like, that's kind of like the best way to describe D. Catalano, dude. Like, he's really on some other shit, and he's coming out 10:30. You know, that's Devil's Night. So he wanted his album to come out, his menacing synthwave album, to come out the day before Halloween, and that's going to be perfect. And then also the homie Dr. Doppler, who's on the label, he's coming out on 10:30 as well, and he's got a really dope instrumental, like more of like a beat tapey kind of thing. And I actually was the one who he wanted to put it out as a full tape digitally. Like, he's putting it out on cassette as well, and so is D. Catalano, but Dr. Doppler wanted it to come out as a full one stream, like one track. And I was like, yo, different time though with Spotify and all that. Like, let's give him the chopped version as well. And he was like, yo, he's like, let's do it. So he sent me the final wave, and I chopped up the tracks myself in Pro Tools so that, you know, he has multiple songs and everything's a banger on it. Like, everything these guys are dropping is just bangers. So it's like, I'm lucky that they're so dope, man. Like, to be honest, they make my job easy.
Dope, man. This was a really hard interview or conversation for me to have, because I had to put my fandom aside while doing this. I really think that you're one of the best that's ever done it, which is weird to say because you're only like a year or two older than me, but I feel like your legacy is already intact. I'm really excited to just be on the sideline, watch all these projects come out, and 2020, you're just going to flourish and keep doing the damn thing. So thanks for being here, man.
Thank you, bro. Like, man, that means so much to me. Thank you, for real. And 2020, I was just thinking about it 2 days ago, and I stopped myself from writing something on social media again, where I was just like, I'm like, I have collaborations coming out in 2020 with fucking Slug, DJ Premier, Bumpy Knuckles, Shabam Sadiq, Razkaz. And there's some other NDA stuff I can't even talk about that's going to be a life changer for sure. But like, just the idea that all that's coming out, like, I think this is going to be the biggest year of my life so far. 2020 is going to be the big year.
Yo, I'm so glad I was able to get you on before you're too big to stop answering my calls and emails. So thank you.
I'll get out of here. Hey, man, I'm an email away from you, bro. You hit me up anytime. Come on, let's go.
Love it, man. Thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, brother.